On today's College Football Inquirer, the winner of 10 of the last 15 FCS national titles is moving to the FBS. North Dakota State, the Bison, headed to the Mountain West. Is that a good move? Should they have stayed where they were and kept on winning titles? Or can they get more glory in the upper reaches of college football? Plus, an Alabama judge rules on Charles Bediako, the G League player who came back to Alabama and was playing on a temporary restraining order. What happens next? Also, Stephen Godfrey and I debate, are there any quarterbacks in college football due for a Sam Darnold-like redemption arc? We can do that now with the transfer portal. Plus, you heard it the other day, we had to stretch it into a whole segment. Stephen Godfrey compares transfer quarterbacks to gently used vehicles. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer. Ross Dellinger is off today, but Stephen Godfrey and I are here. And Godfrey's fired up. He's been fired up. He's been fired up since late last week. We finished recording the show for Thursday, and then it was Friday when this news started popping out that North Dakota State could be headed to the Mountain West. And then North Dakota State made it official on Monday morning. They're indeed headed to the Mountain West this year. So 2026, North Dakota State will be playing in the FBS. The winners of 10 of the last 15 FCS national titles, they kicked everybody's ass in the FCS, and now they are headed to the FBS. And I remember our group text on Friday when the news started to leak out. In fact, our pal Ross Dellinger was one of the first people to report on that.
Yep.
And Stephen Godfrey just texted the group, "I hate this."
I do hate this. I hate this a lot. I want to acknowledge why this happened, and it's money and it's aspiration. And I don't want to just spit in the face of aspiration in college football. I don't think that's a good idea, right? College football system is sort of broken in perpetuity, Andy. But the FCS playoffs are as close to perfect a thing as we've got. I don't know if the listeners or viewers are like as familiar with the FCS playoffs as I am. But you go through, you play a regular season schedule, okay? You try to schedule with intent. If you're a good FCS program, you might take a paycheck game, say if you're in North Dakota State. You might go and beat an Iowa, which has happened in history, right? You might go and bring someone down to earth. I think they've beaten Iowa and Iowa State. I don't know why I just thought of that. Then you don't have a conference championship game, Andy. You don't bother with it. You play on campus playoff games against the entirety of the sport, minus a couple of the HBCUs. I'm kind of streamlining through this. But you have a world in which North Dakota State could feasibly play Harvard, right?
Now, because the Ivy League just said its champion can play this past year. Yeah.
And then you play in a bracket and you host and you visit and you go on campus all the way until a national championship game, which this year conveniently was moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and I attended it in Vanderbilt's newly renovated stadium. It was lovely. It was packed out by Montana State and Illinois State fans. It was a great game. It was probably the best game I saw in person all year, although I was at the national title. But I think pure four quarters plus overtime.
The FCS championship game was insane. It was a heartbreaking loss for Illinois State.
It was amazing.
Unbelievable for Montana State.
Yeah, absolutely. Emotional swings for sure. So, yeah, I hate this, but let's talk about what's actually going to happen now. Let's talk about the price of aspiration, Andy, because if you're North Dakota State, the DNA of your fandom or your program, wherever you are in the ladder, if you're an assistant coach, if you're a fan, if you live in Fargo, if you go to the games, Andy, to make this move in 2026, they are foregoing any postseason eligibility whatsoever. They cannot win the Mountain West Championship for 2 years. They can go to a bowl.
We'll get into this and how stupid this is.
They can go to a bowl in the next 2 years if allotments aren't filled. So, you know, we did the whole 5-7 dance this year where you start talking about APR and all that jazz. They could fill a bowl spot in the 2 year window. So for the next 2 years, North Dakota State can do whatever they can. And I think they're actually going to be pretty good out of the gate. And we can get into how FCS teams can kind of degradate as they go through FBS, because there's a lot of rules and a lot of systems that change and scholarships and now rev share we got to talk about. The North Dakota State that you've heard about as a college football fan is going to appear in 2026. It is going to play in a weird kind of weakened Mountain West, and we'll talk about those teams as well. And then that's it. That's all they can do. They cannot compete for the Mountain West Championship. And by the way, when we'll roll through the teams real fast, they could win the Mountain West this year, Andy.
Yeah, and this is like, just change this rule.
Yeah, it's really bad.
I don't understand. Like, this rule exists, I think, because they didn't want, you know, an FCS program that had like one special team to just jump up for a year when they knew they had a really good team and then try to jump back. But that's not going to happen here. And that's not like there's so, especially because in this case, if they could win the Mountain West and they were eligible, yeah, they could theoretically make the college football playoff. Like, the barrier to entry is high enough already. Like, you don't have to handicap them more. If they're good enough to make the college football playoff in year one, then by God, let them in. Like, if they win the Mountain West in year one, let them in. Like, and let them play for the Mountain West Championship, because it's stupid not to. They're coming in at a disadvantage. They had fewer scholarships than everybody else. But let me read through the lineup of the new Mountain West. Because remember, a lot of the Mountain West that you know is going to the new Pac-12. So gone are Boise State, Fresno State, Utah State, San Diego State. I'm missing
anybody with money. Anybody with money, yeah, basically, except for UNLV, which may not have money.
Yeah. So it's Air Force, Hawaii, Nevada, New Mexico, North Dakota State, Northern Illinois. I bet a lot of you forgot that one was coming. Northern Illinois, yeah, a football-only member of the Mountain West. San Jose State, UNLV, UTEP, and Wyoming. That is your new Mountain West lineup.
Sure. Okay. All right. This is what you've given up. You will not play any of the Dakota schools. You will not play any of your rivals. It was funny. I was looking on Reddit, and North Dakota State and JMU fans were trying to figure out how fast they could get a series together, because that's going to be as close as North Dakota State gets as for a rival, because they had a lot of great postseason games against one another. So you're going to play an I don't want to say unorthodox. That's putting a dress on a pig. You're going to play a bad schedule against a kind of a very weakened conference. You can't win it. And this is all, by the way, Andy, so that you can claim you're an FBS team, but you can't go to a bowl for 2 years. You are now going to have to compete in Rev and NIL at the FBS level. And you're doing all of this for a cut of a very, very small pie, because last week, and I'm sure if Ross was here, I'll do my best, Ross. Mm-hmm. I need a hat. The Mountain West extended its rights agreements with its current partners plus the CW. And the payout is, I believe, $2.5 million per legacy member a year, which doesn't include North Dakota State. On top of this, they're paying $17 million total to make this transition. North Dakota State has to pay in to do this.
Yeah.
I am confused what the net pot, like what is the long term plan for the Bison here? Other than to say we are in the FBS.
The FBS national title. That is what they're thinking. And
okay,
whether they actually would do that or not in the world of Ohio State and Alabama. Look, Indiana did it. So now, as our producer TJ points out, you no longer have to be a champion of a group of six, it's a group of six now, conference, to make the college football playoff. But I don't think they would be eligible for the CFP either in this particular case.
I am guessing that they would not receive an invitation to the Disney Invitational either, at least in that 2 year window. Also, we don't know what the schedule is yet. They haven't scheduled. They've got to redo. And you know what's funny? The bit we did last week, this kind of affects you, right? Didn't we have UTEP involved in this?
Well, we did. And what I said was the Mountain West has not released its schedule. So one of the things you do is just call the Mountain West and say, give UTEP a bye on this date.
Guess what, guys? Yeah, there's. You got hope.
The MAC's the same way, by the way. The MAC also has not released its conference schedule. But yeah, so I actually, because I tend to land on your side on this, Godfrey.
Yeah.
Where if you are special somewhere, just keep being special. Don't go make yourself just another one of the guys. And I said that to my son this weekend. And he's like, what are you talking about? You go try to be the best no matter what. If you feel like you're good enough, you go try to be the best.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, I get it. And if you're North Dakota State and you have been kind of dominating the FCS, maybe you think it is time. Maybe you think the way you do it is better. And I will say, historically, the teams that have been dominant in the FCS have found pretty quick success in the FBS. Appalachian State, James Madison.
Yes, it's a yes and. It's a yes and. And this is where I have a lot of questions that can't be answered in this segment and people I would love to get on the phone with in Fargo. For every move up that works, there's a move up that probably should not have happened. Okay. The infrastructure necessary to be competitive and successful. And I'm not saying that the Bison don't have it, by the way. Do you see how careful Andy and I are putting that Z in Bison? I've been there. I know how y'all are. I've covered North Dakota State. It's not Bison. That means you're not out of town. It means you're not from there, eh? Okay. So it's Bison. You got to roll that S. You got to into a Z. Okay. Shout out. By the way, pre-gamed 1 year before an NDSU game in the Viking Stadium against Eastern Washington. Those are the fantastic fan base. Love y'all. I'm not being critical. It's not like I don't want you in the party. I just don't want what makes North Dakota State so awesome to fade away.
But okay,
that's my biggest concern.
Name me the team, the program. I think I know where you're gonna what you're gonna name. But name me the program that has been historically good in the FCS or 1AA that went to FBS and just cratered.
Other than Georgia Southern.
That's the one I figured you'd name.
Yeah. So really, but it comes down to infrastructure is the biggest thing, Andy, because James Madison, I think, is what North Dakota State is looking at right now. But here's the issue with James.
It's the most recent one. Appalachian State's been a while.
Yes, but App's also fallen back to earth as well, and they've had issues with donors. They've had issues with money. They've had issues with, well, it wasn't like this when we were winning national titles. There is a fatigue that sets in, and we've seen this in the group of five, just with regular group of five schools that have a run of success. And they don't build upon it. I'm going to get into one of my tropes that I say on the show all the time. And no matter where you are in the station of college football, if you do not build upon your success and reinvest what's happening, you will fall off. This happens to Alabama and Notre Dame. It definitely happens in the group of five. And so I'm not sure if North Dakota State understands how much more money it's going to take to maintain as a dominant brand. Like, and here's, let me ask you this. Where do you think they're comping to James Madison? They're probably comping to Boise, right?
Yes.
Financially, are they in that place? Like, the thing about driving through James Madison, I did this a couple times because when I worked at Vox, it was in DC, and I would drive up there on I-81, and you'd pass through James Madison's campus on Interstate 81, Andy. And before they were in the FBS, they looked like they were in the FBS. The facilities at James Madison, the infrastructure they built, the patience that they exercised, they came in and hit it at the right moment because they'd been preparing for it for years. I'm not saying they haven't at North Dakota State. I'm saying it's a keyhole to successfully achieve this.
Because I think they probably are like that. And I think, I also think there's a little schematic piece of it that they are going to be the worst kind of changeup for defensive coordinator staff to deal with. And I'm fascinated to see how that looks as well.
Are they going to keep it? Are they going to keep the system?
I think they need to. I think they should. I think it differentiates them. It makes them tougher to defend. It makes them harder to prepare for. And the problem is for them, and this is what happens when you get into the leagues with more money.
Yeah.
Because they're going to probably have to play some bye games against those teams. You know, it's really, really big teams. And if they're that good and their system works that well, guess what? It's going to become everybody else's system too. And then you're not special anymore.
Exactly. I just think that there are a lot of unforeseen circumstances afoot here. And it's been so fun to watch the Bison. And I don't think we're giving it enough sell here. When you had to go to Fargo in the FCS playoffs, you were going to die. I know they were upset this year by Illinois State, and it was a massive upset. But they were such a dominant brand. They were more dominant than Nick Saban's Alabama against the landscape of the FCS.
That's the other part of it, because we talked about this when Nick Saban's Alabama was doing it, and it was real. Like, those fans got bored of winning national titles.
Yeah, and definitely.
As you pointed out correctly, North Dakota State was more dominant than Nick Saban Alabama. The fact that the team they put on the field this year, which was a really good team that got upset by a team that made it to the national title game, that this was a crushing, bitter disappointment, that this was a failure of a season.
Yes.
Maybe you do need a new challenge because maybe you are bored with this.
I have more questions than I have like sort of podcast ready hot takes. I will tell you, like, if you've listened to the show for a while, I grew up on this level of football. I was raised a Georgia Southern fan. I've seen what aspiration without execution yields. And it's a lot of trips to the Camellia Bowl. Okay. It's a lot of 6-5 win seasons for fan bases that, and if you are a fan of a bigger school, you may not understand this. These programs, North Dakota State, James Madison, Georgia Southern, App, go back to Eastern Kentucky. Like when you pull those dynasties together in the FCS, you have championship pride that is no different than Alabama or Notre Dame or anyone else historically in college football. Then you move up. Your games are against teams you're not familiar with. You might be playing on a Wednesday night. Your fans can't get there. The value of the game day experience is somewhat mortgaged in favor of, hey, well, we moved up so we could make more money and get this TV chunk, and now we get to play on TV more often, but now it's like it's a weeknight, and we're going to be a homecoming team more often than not against out-of-conference teams. And all of a sudden, you chip away at this really valuable championship identity that you built for yourself over decades. And it's impossible to get back, because winning the Sun Belt or winning the MAC or the Mountain West is not the same, Andy, as being a national champion. So I don't know what the long-term solution is here. I just know that I have said this for years. I think you would probably agree with me. The quality of life and the quality of football is better at the very, very top of the FCS than it is in the middle of the Group of Five. And that's what you just traded for.
Well, but they have a choice to decide whether they want to be in the middle of the Group of Five or not. They don't have to be in the middle. They could be at the top of the Group of Five.
Well, that's a money question. That's a money question. You know, like I mentioned this last week on the show.
It's a money question, but it's also a management question. It's okay. You can have money and spend it poorly. You can waste money.
Florida State.
Right. But if you manage it well, which I would argue that North Dakota State's been pretty excellent at managing it, if you stay true to who you are,
yeah,
there's a good chance that North Dakota State can be one of the better teams in the Group of Six and fairly quickly, because we just saw James Madison do it.
Yeah,
it's not impossible.
I'm looking at a list of recently drafted players from this program, and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Like, their ability to produce, like Gray Zabel, the best rookie offensive lineman in the NFL this year, just got himself a Super Bowl ring with the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting guys like Cody Mauch, plays for the Buccaneers.
Yep.
Played on a torn ACL that he didn't realize was torn this season.
Yeah.
They produce really good NFL players. And if you keep doing that, you're going to be fine.
But here's what scares me. I interviewed Dylan Radins a couple years ago, offensive lineman for North Dakota State, plays for the Tennessee Titans. So many of these guys we're talking about were falling through into a very specific bucket for North Dakota State to attract and develop. And part of that is being at the height of the FCS. Mm-hmm. And these guys are not getting enough evaluations in the Group of Five. Who North Dakota State targets now, others are going to target. I'm really curious, and this is where I'm not trying to have
others should have been targeting them anyway.
you lose the subterfuge. You lose the sort of camo that you had, where it's like, hey, come down to the FCS. We're going to develop you up, and then look at the pedigree that we have.
But the
and you're
thing
gonna
is,
win titles.
Godfrey, those guys, like North Dakota State, doesn't need to recruit. Still, don't recruit different guys than that. Keep recruiting those guys. Now, you do occasionally need to go grab some more dynamic skill guys, which you can now because you have more scholarship opportunities, more everything. But on the line of scrimmage, just keep bringing in the same people you always did, because the other thing is, the reason you could bring them in is the other schools didn't want them. They still don't. They still lack the imagination. They will always lack the imagination.
If you can maintain a counterintuitive stance in the market while being just another guy, so to speak, with your conference affiliation and your status, great. By the way, I don't think people realize how many quarterbacks have been drafted from this program.
It's a lot. And
everybody talks about Carson Wentz.
Their most recent quarterback was at the Senior Bowl. He looked very good.
I mean, there's a lot. Cam Miller, Easton Stick, Carson Wentz, Trey Lance. I mean, like, it might be more than your favorite.
Now, how many of them have been good in the NFL? Carson Wentz, was good.
I mean, how many
for
up until Sunday, we didn't have a lot of good USC quarterbacks, in the NFL. Like,
that's
it's
true.
Yeah.
But it will be interesting because I don't think, like, the linemen that they've gotten, that they've developed, they'll still be there for them because they got them because nobody else wanted them in the first place. So I think they can keep that energy. Now, will they have a situation where their head coach does not get lured away by a power conference school to be their linebackers coach?
This is true. Well, that was a little bit of an okie doke because he's now the head coach of Fresno State. Yeah, he did that. He knew he was one and done doing that to bridge out.
But he was going to be the head coach at Fresno. Like, think about that.
Here's what scares me, Andy. Craig Bohl left North Dakota State to go to Wyoming.
To go to Wyoming. Yep.
Wyoming is not Boise now, right? We've seen a lot of North Dakota State coaches leave and have varying degrees of success, but there's something sort of kind of in the water, and it's a native recipe in Fargo. So, and look, as a triple option enthusiast, please don't don't change what you're doing. I swear to God, if you Clay Helton, well, that's going to be so disappointing.
They're not triple option. So as a kid who grew up playing football in the 90s,
yes.
Like, my high school copied the Dallas Cowboys offense. It was all based on the lead draw. It was the pro set.
Right.
North Dakota State runs a version of that in the year of our Lord 2026. And I'm so excited to see it because all these defenses have gotten physically smaller to deal with spread offenses.
Yes.
You don't have 250-pound middle linebackers anymore unless they're an absolute freak of nature. You have 230-pound middle linebackers and you have 215-pound outside linebackers. And when you send a 240-pound fullback at those people, they fold like cardboard.
We should clarify, maybe this will be a segment in the future of the offseason, where when I say triple option, I'm not necessarily like A back, B back, Paul Johnson. I'm saying I embrace the entire musical genre, if you will, and I do think they fall under the option tree. But yes, they do not run a typical under
center
triple.
But also, to your point about why the NFL likes their quarterbacks can take snaps from under center. Their quarterbacks know how to execute play fake properly.
There's a lot of stuff they're doing, ironically, that skips the height of college football that the NFL is demanding. That's one of the reasons why they go to the Senior Bowl and people start talking about them.
Yeah. But I'm excited to see that. And I actually wouldn't mind seeing that proliferate a little more. And you're kind of seeing it now. I had Alex Golish, the new Auburn coach, on my show. And he's
awesome.
One of those guys that comes, he runs the old Art Briles offense, which is as different from what I'm talking about as anything. But he has a goal line package where he has two fullbacks and they hand off to a 325-pound offensive lineman. So,
well, yeah, because you can still look wide splits in a spread technically moves a lot of the defenders out for you to run the ball. Like, we don't have to be myopic about this. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm excited to see what that coming to the FBS does in the, because I think defenses are going to struggle with it. And by the way, the Mountain West is a very schematically diverse,
very much
conference
so.
Now because you have Air Force still, you have North Dakota
Dan
State
Mullen.
Now. You have Dan Mullen running, which is Dan Mullen's offenses will smash you up front, and then he's very dependent on he'll basically shape his play calling to his talent.
Mm-hmm.
They'll ram it down your throat if they have the right talent, but if they have a dude who can throw, they'll chuck it. 56% of the time.
2 years ago, Niumatalolo's, and I can't remember the name of his OC at San Jose State, they reworked. I guess it's sort of a run and shoot successor, Andy. Is that, I don't know if that's the best way to qualify what San Jose is doing. We love a diversity of scheme. You're kind of talking me into this. I just don't want them to fall into that mediocre G5 rank.
I think this is sort of, we see this more pro teams. Or we see it with college teams. I don't think we recognize it with college teams. We see it with pro teams where, like, the Cardinals are always bad because the Cardinals' ownership sucks.
Yeah.
The Steelers are always pretty good because their ownership is competent.
Absolutely.
North Dakota State's ownership is competent.
They have been to this point. So I just I want to be hopeful that they emulated James Madison and not App and Georgia Southern, because you can get cash poor very quickly and run into some systemic decades long problems. Now, one thing that makes me hopeful that we haven't discussed yet, just as a fan of the sport, which believe it or not, I am, even though I complain all the time, this will open the door for some FBS, some power program to take a 2-1, Andy, and say, yeah, we'll play in Fargo. How bad could it be? How bad could it be? Hey, Andy, we're a Big Ten team. How bad could it be, Andy? We play big boy football. Some poor bastard sign up to go to Fargo.
Minnesota, Iowa, they're smart enough not to take
that
deal.
Oh, they ain't touching. No. They're not touching. Yeah. No, you're
but
damn
Rutgers?
Right. Hey, Maryland, don't do it. Okay? You won't come back. They will bury you in the snow. Like, don't do this. I shouldn't say this now. The Bison are really going to be mad at me. If North Dakota State calls and says, we'll come to your place twice. If you come here once, don't do it. I am a Georgia Southern fan. Don't do it. Trust me. It is the hardest place to play that I have ever seen.
Oh, I can't wait. Cannot wait. Godfrey, one other thing we do need to touch on before we move on to more fun and frivolity. Charles Bediako, the Alabama basketball player. I realize we're a football show, but this has every sport implications. Charles Bediako, the Alabama basketball player, denied an injunction by a Tuscaloosa County judge that would have allowed him to keep playing for the Crimson Tide while his lawsuit against the NCAA went through the court system. That probably is going to slow things down. I would say this is the most significant win in court for the NCAA in a long, long, long time.
I think that is solely because it's the first time the NCAA found itself on the side of the common public sentiment.
Yes.
How many times, Andy, since I became a national sports writer and you and I would have these conversations off the record, how many times did the NCAA stand in the face of public sentiment or just basic logic, right? Letting kids get some money to play, you know, letting a kid have a hotel, whatever it is, right? All those years, the NCAA would argue principle over reality. And this is the one time in my entire career where the overwhelming amount of public, I just did 680 The Fan in Atlanta, and they lumped this case in with Chambliss and Aguilar and last year in Pavia. And I said, whoa, we're talking about, there's a world of difference, I think, to the rank and file sports fan of saying, hey, there's an undersized quarterback who's really effective. He's probably not going to have a pro career. Let's give him a 6 or 7 year window to play 5 or 6, universally agree to that and move on. I think the sentiment for that would be, I think, universally accepted for the most part amongst fans. This G League situation, Andy, I've never seen anything like it. It was from top to bottom, everybody, even sports writers who are more socially aligned like you and I, for just like, let the kid make a living. We're really pissed off about that. Everybody was against this.
He can make a living playing basketball. And that's what the judge said. And the judge said, there's three standards you have to meet to get a preliminary injunction, which would have allowed him to run out the clock. And one of those is you have to be irreparably damaged if you can't play while this is going on. And the judge is like, it's not irreparable. Like, you can calculate the damages, right? We can calculate exactly how much money you'd make playing for Alabama this season, and you can sue for that. So there's no irreparable damage, and then it's not that there's no other remedy available. The judge said there is another remedy, and that's designate that amount and sue for it and win if you want. And then the other one is it has to look like you'll prevail on the merits of your case. And the judge is like, I don't know that you would have prevailed because you're arguing tortious interference, but you entered into a contract with Alabama knowing that the contract violated NCAA rules. So you knew there were going to be some bumps in the road all along. Like, this is not a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise to you. So but it's interesting because the assumption was doing it in state court as opposed to federal court, where the NCAA has been fairly successful with eligibility cases. Doing a state court, they thought they'd have a friendly venue, that there's no way a judge in Tuscaloosa County would rule against the Crimson Tide. Well, the judge was pretty clear in his order. He's like, I don't want to be the one who opens the floodgates to this thing.
Well, and that's because I think it's fundamentally different. And I think this might actually be helpful in the long term for college athletes to make have a reasonable window to earn a living in their careers.
Yeah, because people, like the public, Like, if you take this to federal court and you argue it on antitrust grounds, the reason all the athletes won their cases in the compensation cases is they couldn't argue that the fan, the end user, preferred unpaid players. And the ratings bear right. that out. The fan didn't yes. care if they were paid or not. I think the fan cares if they're like college age and if they've gone pro or not.
X-Pro, I think, was where that was the bridge too far. Yeah. We found it. You and I said this for as long as we've been doing this job, that the fans aren't going to care we know they don't care if it's $10,000 in a duffel bag in cash. So if they're making $2 million over X amount of years or whatever it is, they don't care. They really don't. It's about is Alabama going to beat Auburn? You know,
and we've also seen that in the pro sports, like people publicly complaining about how much money the guys made, but not stopping watching. So we kind of knew that what was going to happen there. But yeah, this is where it would probably hurt your product. And so you're probably not going to win in federal court. So that's why they're going to state court. Now, I will point out, because we're going to talk probably in later shows about Trinidad Chambliss and Joey Aguilar, different cases about different things. Both of them are different from each other, too. But both of them are in state court for the same reason Charles Bediakos was in state court. So big win for the NCAA, which it doesn't happen very often. But I'm with you, Godfrey. They did finally fall on the same side as public sentiment here. And I think the coaches, for the most part, are happy, too, because every one of them would have done this, but they wouldn't have liked it. And it would have been in basketball. It would have been in football after the draft and after the first cutdown day in August. And in baseball, oh my God.
Oh, man.
Who knows? Baseball would have been nuts. So I think the coaches are breathing a sigh of relief. Now, some people may try this in other courts too, but we'll see. I think when you go into an SEC town and the judge in the, and I realize he's the second judge, the first one recused himself.
Yeah.
But he's still a judge in Tuscaloosa County, Alabama. He lives in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, he's got to go eat breakfast downtown tomorrow. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's got to go to the Waysider and get those drop biscuits and red-eye gravy, and somebody's gonna say something. So if you go in it, but you go into an SEC town and the judge takes your side, I think you feel fairly confident you're gonna be okay in any venue. So that'll be an interesting one to watch. But yeah, we'll probably talk about the Chambliss case and the Aguilar case because they're different. I'm not saying they don't have a chance to win.
No.
Because they do. We'll talk about that later in the week. But when we come back, the Sam Darnold redemption arc in the NFL is translatable to college now because of the transfer portal.
Okay.
Are there any quarterbacks in college football who could experience a similar redemption arc? We'll discuss when we return. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and watching Sam Darnold go from the guy who was seeing ghosts and had the worst mononucleosis graphic of all time, I guess the only mononucleosis graphic
or
of
best,
all time.
Or best.
Probably.
Shout out to the Chiron operator for that one. It lives in infamy.
Seriously, I do think television production people probably did more damage to Sam Darnold than the Jets organization or the Panthers organization ever did. Because his seeing ghost thing, he was mic'd up and somebody let that air. But
the monographic became, it was an interchangeable meme. I think Timothy Burke, formerly of Deadspin, did this where you could take the graphic and then put your own words in.
Yes.
And so it could be like, and you could do it for yourself. Yeah. It's the poor guy, man. Yeah.
But he got through it. Sam Darnold got through it, found his way to San Francisco, then Minnesota. And he goes to Seattle and has this incredible season, wins the Super Bowl. And our producer, TJ, threw this question out yesterday, and I thought it was a really good one. Who in college football could experience that same level of redemption arc? And I was thinking, we've actually kind of seen it a little bit in the past. I'd say Jaden Daniels did. Remember when his teammates were like throwing his things out of his locker and talking trash about him when he left Arizona State? And then he goes and wins the Heisman at LSU.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a turnaround. I wonder what those guys are doing now.
Yeah, Carson Beck almost did it this year. Because let's be real. Carson Beck was not welcome back at Georgia. That was not an option for him.
No, I think he's probably, what, two passes against Indiana away from winning the narrative, as we say?
Yeah.
He certainly won financially.
Anyway. Yeah, I think he won it anyway. I think he got Miami to the national title game, which is farther than Gunnar Stockton took Georgia. And now you could say the talent around him, but the talent around Gunnar Stockton is pretty damn good, too. So I don't know. I think we have some opportunities for this sort of thing in college football now. The one guy who jumped out, and it's probably because I just talked to his new head coach last week. So I had Brett Bielema on three show last week, and he was fantastic and talking about, you know, players like Devin Witherspoon, who's a star for the Seahawks now. But they did a great job with Luke Altmyer, and Luke Altmyer was perfect for Illinois. I did not realize they thought they were going to get another year of Tommy DeVito, and then he was denied a hardship waiver. And so they had to jump into the portal, and that's how they got Luke Altmyer. And Luke Altmyer was talented, but behind Jackson Dart at Ole Miss. So their new quarterback coming in, now he hasn't been the name the starter, but the, you know, the paycheck says he's going to be the starter.
Yeah.
Caden Hauser, you know him, you love him, Godfrey, because he was very good at East Carolina last year for John David Baker, the OC,
sure,
who is now the Ole Miss OC. Caden Hauser, though, Big Ten fans should remember him as the guy who was getting clobbered at the end of that year that began with Mel Tucker getting fired. And Caden Hauser was a redshirt freshman at Michigan. I believe he and Sam Leavitt were on the roster at the same time. I know they crossed over for at least a year. I'm trying to remember exactly which years. But Caden Hauser gets thrown to the wolves, essentially. And, you know, when that happens, even if you're a high profile, you know, big time recruit, the world kind of moves on from you. And I think that's what happened with Caden Hauser. And so he goes to East Carolina, has a pretty good year in 2024. Has a really good year.
Really good year last year.
Did I say
year,
Michigan? Yeah. I meant Michigan State. Mel Tucker.
Well, we said Mel Tucker. Book. Yeah, no one's going to conflate that Mel Tucker coached at Michigan, so we're good there.
So Caden Hauser goes from Michigan State to East Carolina, has an okay first year as a starter at East Carolina, was awesome last year as a starter. His completion percentage jumped 5 points. His touchdowns through the roof. His interceptions were very low. And he's coming into a team that, look, Illinois is losing some talented players like Gabe Hawkins and J.C. Davis. And so it's not like they're just reloading. But I do think if you're a team that is in the top half of the Big Ten like Illinois is, and they won 19 games the past 2 years, I think there's a chance that if you hit, you could have a very big redemption arc.
Yeah, I also want to shout out Blake Harrell really fast just to do it for maybe the first time on this show. Watch that name, because the in-season transition he made
East Carolina's
in 24.
Head coach. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Like the in-season transition he made in 24 to then win down the stretch and then keep it going this year. Awesome. So I was going to foil this, Andy, and kind of poke holes in Sam Darnold a little bit, because it's hard to talk about the Super Bowl without talking about the Seattle defense and what they were able to accomplish against New England. So, yes, a redemption arc is great, but then all of a sudden it's a redemption arc because the defense that is on your team in your uniform is absolutely brutal. So our producer TJ looked it up because I asked. It was about 21% of their blitz rate in the game against New England. So, and by the way, Sam Darnold was also pressured a good bit. He just was more productive on his dropbacks under pressure. So he faced pressure on 15 of his 40 dropbacks. This is just Sam Darnold. I'm going to hype him for a second. He did more. He had 13 throws under pressure, and he got 56 yards and a touchdown off of those pressured throws, whereas Drake May did not. Now, back to my original bit. You can offer up a list of guys that are going to transfer this year, Andy, and we can say, oh, you know what? Hey, maybe that's a redemption arc. That's a redemption arc. I think the key component here is, are you going to, you've shown some sort of improvement based off of, you know, catastrophe, first school, you go somewhere, you get better. Now you're coming back into to a major program. What does the defense look like? Right before, during the break, you talked about, 21-22 Georgia, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure I could have probably won a national title I would have just been doing a lot. Like it would have been a short screen game.
Nobody was scoring on them. Yeah, they yeah. had a better collection of defensive line talent than yes. anyone in college football this century and probably ever.
Yes, I distinctly remember a young man named Caleb Downs terrorizing Texas, on corner blitzes and thinking, yeah, Will Howard is going to be a national title winning quarterback. So I think it's as much, at least if we're going to use the Sam Darnold comp, it's going to be as much about, are you stepping into an effective defensive situation, which I think would narrow down the pool of some of these transfers, right? So we're also going to do a bit on transfer quarterbacks and cars because you asked me to. So I'm looking at that list and I'm thinking, like, not to spoil that. I'm like, well, some of these guys are coming in. They're going to have great offenses. I'm not sure if they're going to have that kind of representation on defense.
But I don't think you have to necessarily win the national title in college football. Like I mentioned, Jaden Daniels won a Heisman
Carson Beck,
trophy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think Carson Beck's a great example as well.
The other one I would throw out there is DJ Lagway, because incredible hype. Had some, showed some promise at the end of his freshman year. Horrific sophomore year.
Yes.
Like, just all of it thrown away as a sophomore. He goes to Baylor this year from Florida.
Yeah, but my problem there, Andy, is that he's going in. He's going to play for a great defensive mind, right? Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. Nobody doubts that. The problem is Baylor's defense is getting worse.
But if they can compete for the Big 12 title, I would argue that that's redemption.
Oh, you're
enough.
Just saying we're good enough on the narrative there.
Yeah, I don't think you have to win the whole thing. I mean, there's 136 teams. There's only 32 NFL teams. Like, one of them had to win it. So,
yeah, I would say if Baylor were to win, go to the Big 12 championship, you'd say it would qualify.
I think that would be fine. And I think if that happens, we're sitting here this time next year talking about DJ Lagway at the top of the NFL draft. And he has a lot to work back from, because he had the injury, and it was just all like little things kept popping up. Mm-hmm. Not really having a chance to work with his teammates all last offseason. And he's gotta button up some of that stuff and prove that he can lead a team. And I think that's the big question with him, because he can make throws that most quarterbacks in college football can't make. Most quarterbacks who we'll have much higher on our list than him can't make the same kind of throws he can make. But if he can't put it together as part of a game plan, if he can't do the things in the offseason and during the week that need to be done to lead a team, it doesn't matter. So he's got the opportunity. He just has to take advantage of it.
Jake Spavital is the OC.
Yes, Jake Spavital is the OC, I think that's a very good combination there. Spav is a calming influence. He's just one of the more even keeled people you'll meet.
Yeah, it's funny. I think this just illustrates maybe a glass half full, glass half empty mentality on the show, because you're looking at it as what I'm seeing is this. Dave Aranda, probably in an aggressive prove it situation going into 26. Like, I think this is it. I think they're ready to make a change potentially. And then you have Lagway coming from one unstable situation and with the head coach and then going directly into another.
Oh, it could be a complete disaster. That's the thing. It's an opportunity. It could go either way. But he has the special skill set that most people don't. And I think they're at that position. If you're special, you can elevate the rest of your team in a way that you usually can at other positions.
Yes. I'm going to work this out in real time. I'm going to throw this out and you can pick at it. I think in the quarterback transfer market, there's different sort of flavors of what you're looking for. DJ falls under a very specific category of raw talent has never been met on the field. Right. So then we would say it was an institutional issue. The other thing that you're seeing, I think the other major trend that you see in quarterback transfer is experienced starter, maybe a lower overall ceiling of talent needed to be a game manager for a more complete roster. So it's really it's not always one or the other, but those feel like the two most dominant narratives. Kid who had a lot of talent and evaluation.
Josh Hoover. Josh Hoover is expected to go into Indiana and game manage the heck out of that thing. And you saw, Fernando didn't have the kind of numbers that Josh Hoover had at Cal. You know, Josh Hoover at TCU, probably more productive than Fernando Mendoza at Cal. That doesn't mean he's going to be better than Fernando Mendoza was at Indiana.
Well,
but
I was I was thinking more like Ohio State takes a look and they're like, all right, we got Kyle McCord. But we could make a marginal step up, a incremental step up, and get a Will Howard who's
kind of
being pushed out the door.
He was McCord going, you need to guarantee me the starting job. And Ryan Day being like,
yeah, we're not going to do that. Yeah. That's true. Will Howard, though, effectively a step up, an improvement, wins a national title. So hindsight tells us they did the right thing. But it wasn't a jump like the way you're talking. Like, no one was trying to unlock Will Howard. They just wanted an experienced player. And I think that's the majority of these transfers are one of the two situations, which is you're trying to fix someone with a high potential, or you're trying to find someone who's given you most of their resume already and can effectively manage a superior roster at a title contending school.
Yeah, like the Caden Hauser thing, I think he got unlocked at East Carolina. Like the Michigan State thing. Michigan State.
Yeah.
So we never got to see what he could be at that level. He gets unlocked repaired at East Carolina, and now he gets to go back into the Big Ten as a fully formed product, and we get to see what he was always supposed to be.
Yep, farm leagues. It's happening. I'm the G5 guy, but I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a farm league soon. Maybe they'll have official affiliation.
While we're on this topic, because
you
were cracking me up the other day with your comparisons to transfer quarterbacks to gently used cars. We need to just have a whole
discussion. This was Fernando Mendoza, right? That I said Fernando Mendoza was a certified pre-owned Honda. My parents listened to the show, longtime consumers of certified pre-owned Hondas, and they were like, don't make fun of a certified pre-owned Honda. And I was like, I wasn't.
We're not.
I think it's a great program, Mom. I think it's totally fine that you drive a Pilot for 140,000 miles, Mom.
I can tell you as someone who owned a Pilot for 11 years, and before that, had an Accord that I put 50,000 miles on in the first 11 months and then drove it till it had 190,000.
Or if someone was a poverty line sports writer and was handed their parents' used CRV and still managed to date women successfully in that. You imagine a 6'5" guy getting out of a used Honda CRV on a date? No one was looking for my money.
It's the Simpsons episode where Nelson laughs at the large guy in the
It
small.
Is, yes.
Are you laughing at the size of my automobile? That's the largest automobile I can afford.
That's how your boy pulled up for a date. Yes. All right. So certified pre-owned Honda. I still feel good about that with Mendoza. Yeah. Are we doing it next?
We are going to take
a
break.
All right. I'm jumping.
We're going to take a break.
I got a few.
When we
I'm
come
ready.
Back.
Okay.
Madman Godfrey.
Oh, God.
Everything on the lot must go. The lowest prices of the year.
I'd be the worst salesman.
Oh, I would put you in a cowboy hat. We have those inflatables going. It'll be amazing. We'll be right back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer and Stephen Godfrey. With his comparison of Fernando Mendoza to a certified pre-owned Honda, which I think people took as an insult, which to two sports writers turned podcasters who are also still sports writers.
Yeah.
You don't understand. That's the highest compliment we can give.
Buddy,
it is amazing.
Yeah, that's the height of luxury for us.
Honda's got us through a lot of places that we probably never could have gone otherwise at 33 cents a mile, which is far below the federal guidelines, but newspapers don't pay federal guidelines.
Isn't
mileage.
That Mendoza? Like a Honda, like friendly and unkillable? That's what a Honda pilot says to me. Friendly, accessible, unkillable. Could drive it directly into the woods and out. It would be fine. Yeah.
And that run in the national title game is perfect. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
He was like unkillable.
Yeah, you didn't put the parking brake on and just plowed through the Trader Joe's parking lot and it was fine. Yeah, that's Fernando Mendoza.
You get
Mendoza.
Some scratches on it, you're like, yeah, I've had this thing for 12 years.
It's a Honda.
It
I don't
matter.
Care. Yeah. All right.
Oh, all right.
We're gonna keep that energy. Trust me. Wait till you see these
picks.
We've
made a list with current transfer quarterbacks, with guys who transferred this cycle. And yep. Godfrey, I'm gonna let you lead it off.
All right. This was one that we discussed earlier. I'm gonna start with Rocco Beck. Okay.
All right. And Rocco Beck, Iowa State to Penn State.
Iowa State to okay. Real simple here. We're gonna keep a Northeast vibe about us. All right.
All right.
Ready? You ready? Subaru Forester.
You're gonna make him a Subaru.
Subaru Forester. Look, what can you say negatively about a Subaru's durability?
Nothing.
Would a Subaru last you until 2045 right now? If yes. you knew the apocalypse was coming and you had one vehicle to park, maybe not in the shelter, but near it, you would get like a, you would get a, not in an Outback. Forester's a little bit bigger, right? Okay, a little bit more space there. Rocco Becht is going to be the reliable, consistent producer that Penn State needs. Okay? They could hand Rocco Becht down to their kids. That Rocco Becht is going to be there forever. Is Rocco Becht ever going to win one at the line? If you pull up to a stoplight late night in Tampa and somebody's trying to race you for pinks, no, Rocco Becht is not going to be helpful. Okay? You're going to lose your Rocco
Becht. Tampa, the
Are
Tampa
you drag
metro
racing
area, Rocco Becht is from, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Rocco Becht would be clowned rolling up to an intersection on Bruce B. Downs Boulevard.
I just want to find the corner of the United
States. County line in a Subaru.
I want to find the corner of the United States, and I assume it's Vermont, where people are like, do you want to drag race Subarus this weekend? I mean, I'm sure it's out there. All right. I say that with all the reverence in the world because I am a person. So I want to point this out. I drive a 2000 GMC Sierra, okay? It is the year of our Lord 2026. It has like 135,000 miles on it. I have replaced everything I can, and what I can't, I have one local mechanic, and I know, let me tell you something, the greatest compliment in the world, Andy, is when your mechanic tries to buy your vehicle off of you every time yes. you bring it in cash.
The aforementioned okay? Honda Accord that I drove to 190,000 miles, when I traded it in, the salesman bought the car.
That's what I'm saying. I don't ever yeah. want to get rid of this GMC Sierra. I'm comfortable in who I am. My kids don't love it, but screw them. They're probably going to drive it one day. So this is not a slight to Rocco Becht. I'm saying, sir, Forester, you're going to last forever and be very good at a lot of things. All right?
And that's, hey, if you've seen Penn State scheduled for 2026, that'll get you into the CFP.
Just be reliable. Wouldn't you like that, Penn State? Go ahead.
Yep. I'm going to go with Kenny Minchie. Now, Kenny Minchie comes in second in the competition with CJ Carr at Notre Dame last year. It was close, according to Marcus Freeman.
Okay.
And Kenny Minchie, quite a market for him in the transfer portal. He initially commits to Nebraska, but then Kentucky drops a big bag, and he's going to play for Will Stein at Kentucky. Kenny Minchie, I saw one of these the other day. He's a gently used Hummer EV. The new Hummer, the electric Hummer.
Go on.
You've seen the commercials where it does the crab walk and it has all the fancy stuff on it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
And it's an electric, so acceleration is off the charts. Kenny Minchie's athleticism is undeniable. Like, if you saw him in the Notre Dame spring game running for a touchdown, doing a backflip, like, incredible athleticism. But you don't know because this Hummer, like, you know what the old Hummer gas guzzlers were. Like, for better and worse, you knew exactly what they were. This is a relatively new product. We don't know what it's going to be like. We don't know how the battery life's going to last. We don't know if all of the features are going to be useful.
I see the metaphor.
It could be the most amazing thing ever. Yep.
I see the metaphor. Or, keep going.
Yep. Or it could just kind of fall apart after a few years. We don't know. But that's the glory of this. Like,
what?
Kentucky may have found the next big thing. We just don't know.
And what would be stranger to say in 2027 than reliable and attractive Hummer EV than saying successful and dominant Kentucky football? I think it fits perfectly. That's an excellent excellent job, sir. Excellent job. All right. This one's a little more unorthodox, but I almost bought one of these one time, and it makes me think of Drew Mestemaker. All right. Drew Mestemaker famously, he was the unheralded quarterback who never started a high school game, right? That was the big bio on him, right?
Yep.
So no one ever really knew what they were getting, all right? So there's an entire I'm not, it's not a group of people. It's dads. It's dads who look for this stuff.
Yeah.
When you have fleets, those white F-150s, fleet vehicles that are used by like AC repair companies or like transport companies, whatever, they will drive.
Speaking of unkillable. Yep.
They will drive an F-150, right? And it'll be 50,000 miles and then they'll trade in with the fleet and then they go to a used lot.
It has crank windows.
Yep. It has nothing except everything that you need. And that's exactly the situation that Mestemaker is walking into with his former head coach at North Texas, Eric Morris, at Oklahoma State. It has nothing extra except exactly what you need. And those F-150s, they're always white. You see them. They don't even have a cab on them. It's just bench seats straight against the glass, Andy. You know what I'm talking about, right? There's no bed cover. It's got the long bed. And those things will be driving around in the 2080s. Like those, you cannot kill those trucks. You take care of a Drew Mestemaker, he's going to be reliable for you forever. Oklahoma State, congratulations. I feel like I'm speaking Stillwater's language here.
I think you are.
Yeah.
So I want to go with, take that and twist it a little bit. Let's go to Missouri. So Missouri lands Austin Simmons, the Ole Miss transfer. Austin Simmons was supposed to be the starting quarterback at Ole Miss this year. He was the day one starter. He got hurt against Kentucky. In came Trinidad Chambliss. Everything changed. Austin Simmons still has a very sought-after skill set. We just don't have a sample size on him. We don't know what we got. Austin Simmons is the 5-year-old, and it's probably an Acura SUV because our granny who bought it likes the leather seats, likes to have the heated seats, but she, of course, only drives it to the grocery store. So Austin Simmons is your 5-year-old Acura SUV with 2,000 miles on it.
Yeah,
gave up when she stopped driving.
Yeah, all right. I would go with it's a car where like Austin Simmons had sort of an emotional departure from Ole Miss. He's been through a lot. Like it's a car you may have cried in college, right? You maybe listen to a little emo music in. I think that works. You could also go like old Lexus RX 300. Yeah,
but it's going to potentially perform very well for you for a long time.
So speaking of potential performance, Andy, let's talk about DJ Lagway. Have you ever?
Yep.
I'm going to ask a question I know the answer to. Sir, have you ever rented a car at Hartsfield in Atlanta? The world's most, busiest
many
airport.
Times.
Okay, right. Many all right. Times. So I think this started back when I was in pro wrestling. We were an Enterprise account. So I was on Enterprise for a long time. Enterprise at Hartsfield has the regular Enterprise that you go to. And then they have the Enterprise luxury vehicles. All right. Uh-huh. I don't know what you know about Atlanta. I know Andy knows this, but I don't know about the rest of the world. Approximately 240% of all rap videos are shot in Atlanta. And Enterprise has a luxury vehicle rental division, okay? You can get a luxury vehicle for 2 days, 3 days, and you can do roughly whatever the hell you want to do with it for 2 or 3 days before returning said luxury vehicle. So you can take your pick here, Andy, because I'm not really a luxury vehicle guy. We could just go Corvette, okay? We could go McLaren. Mm-hmm. We could go Lamborghini. We have a Lamborghini
supercar. Yeah, DJ Lagway is a supercar for sure.
All right.
With the documented reliability issues.
So here's the problem. These vehicles have to exchange out in the luxury vehicle market for rentals at a certain lower mileage because the maintenance on these things is impossible. So DJ Lagway is absolutely McLaren, Lamborghini, Corvette that you are buying from Enterprise. So you are getting a Corvette for sure. But you may take said Corvette home and
Corvette.
Think, wow.
Corvettes are actually fairly affordable compared to the rest of the
ones
you're talking about.
All right, let's just go Lamborghini. I feel like that's a universal acclaim for a luxury vehicle or performance vehicle. Yeah. All right. I bought a Lamborghini. I got a deal on it. There's a reason I got a deal on it. I might take it home and say, dear God, did they take this thing mudding? There's the suspension is sideways in this thing.
Cost $2,000.
Yeah, and it looks like someone took it off-roading in South Georgia and then returned it back to the airport. So that is DJ Lagway.
They did.
Yes. DJ Lagway is a performance vehicle who's been rode a little hard.
I love it. All right, look. All right, I'm going to stick in the performance vehicle category. Right. Darian Mensah going from Duke to Miami. So he's a Porsche 911. Not a brand new Porsche 911, but maybe an older one. The thing about a Porsche 911 that you need to understand right now in the market for Porsches, they are one of the few, because cars almost universally depreciate. But if you take care of a Porsche 911, it will appreciate. And it appreciated when he went from Tulane to Duke. And if Miami takes care of it right, it's going to be worth more when they're done than when they started. Darian Mensah might take them back to the national title game. He might win them a national title. It all depends on how you take care of it.
I like that. There's a group of transfer quarterbacks, some of whom are at notable schools, where I could only think of really, really negative comps. And so to be nice, I left some of these individuals off the list. There were two or three in my head. I go flood damage, flood damage, flood damage. But I didn't do that because I'm trying to be nice. It's only February. We got a long off season to go. Okay. Dylan Raiola.
I got one more before we go. Right. Byron Brown going from USF to Auburn. I wrote a column. And on
what do you got here?
About Alex Golish's pledge to run the piss out of the ball. He also said they would run the crap out of the ball. And then
I saw that clip. It was awesome. Yeah, it was good.
So, and I asked him, I said, what does it mean to, how does one run the piss out of the ball? He said, you just keep calling running plays until they stop them. And I was like, ooh, this sounds good. And so Auburn has Jeremiah Cobb back. They're a number one running back from last year. They also went out and got three RB1s from other teams. So they got Baylor's RB1. They got Troy's RB1. I'm blanking on the provenance of the other RB1 they got. But, it was USF's RB1, who is not their leading rusher because Byron Brown was USF's leading rusher at 1,008 yards last year. He also threw for a lot of yards. Byron Brown, if you've ever watched him play, you know what, where we're going with this. I actually made this purchase back in 2019, I found a Raptor with 8,000 miles on it at my local gently used superstore.
Yes.
And basically they're like, the owner found it at the auction and he just wanted to drive it for a couple weeks. And it's like 30 grand less than what you pay new for it. So I got a really good deal on it. Loved driving. I drove it for 6.5 years. It was awesome.
Yes.
Byron Brown is that gently used Raptor, or you could be, if you're a Ram person, a TRX. He's a reliable, dependable truck who can go 160 miles an hour. If you ever watch Byron Brown play, this is accurate.
Okay. I had also Deuce Knight is a like an S2000 Honda Roadster. It's the second car that you buy because it's really fun because you do want to go drag racing in it, but it can't be your you don't want it to be your primary vehicle.
Can't be your daily driver.
That's more of a situation at Ole Miss there.
So you need Trinidad Shambliss to be your daily
driver. Trinidad Shambliss, that's going to be more of a luxury SUV that you can do all the things you need to.
Trinidad Shambliss is one of those that my On3 co-host Ari Wasserman watches these YouTube videos of people who find the cars like in an abandoned field, like an old sports car, like a 1960 sports car. They find it in an abandoned field and they fix it up. Trinidad Shambliss.
Yeah. No, my inner redneck blood. Oh, is Ari part redneck? You think it's in there?
No. He's the opposite.
I know, but that's weird. Okay. Huh. I feel like we're cousins all of a sudden.
He would happily pay somebody else to do that. He doesn't want
to
do it.
Okay.
You want to do it yourself.
Okay, I would just, I'm just going to borrow Yahoo's airtime, by the way. If anyone's listening to this entire segment, I just want to drive a 1987, it's a Buick Grand National GNX. It's considered one of the rarest cars. It's basically the pinnacle of American motor, of muscle cars. So I didn't have a comp for anyone, but basically I think Sean Penn owns one. It was the model that Kendrick Lamar came out last year's Super Bowl halftime show. All the dancers came spilling out. That was a GNX in 87. It's a Buick Grand National.
Oh, I remember these.
It is the greatest vehicle that America has ever made. They go for about $150,000. I just want to drive one day. That's all I want to do. I just want to drive one.
I love that they were like, all right, we're going to take the backseat out of the Roadmaster and we're going to add like 300 horsepower.
And we're going to drop a turbocharged demon from hell under that hood. By the way, you think Ross is going to listen to this and just sigh exhaustedly? Like,
he's
throwing
up all over himself right now.
Yeah. Oh, was he? Okay. I thought he was doing some Congress stuff. This is a form of reporting, folks. Okay. I don't want to hear about it. Okay. This is informative, sort of.
We're an hour in. The people here are the people who are with us for life.
Dirtbags. Sickos only.
But
I'm asking to drive an 87 Buick on the air. So yeah.
Exactly. You know what my dream is? An 87 Buick. It's like I had a friend back in the early 2000s and we were talking about what is the vehicle if you could just have any vehicle, genie waves a wand, it appears in your driveway. And so it could be anything, or a Lamborghini, you know, the most jacked up pickup truck you can imagine. And this guy's like, Chevy Trailblazer. You're like, no, you can have anything. It's like,
Here's the thing. All the Italian sports cars in the world. I told a therapist this one time. I'll say this on the air. They're like, what does your inner voice tell you? And I say, I think there's a voice inside my head at all times. And this is why I'm good at covering college football that just says, buy a Dodge Charger, buy a Dodge Charger, buy a Dodge Charger. At all times, I can't get out of my DNA. It's just the white trash in me that just every time I see a Charger or a Challenger on the road, I'm like, I could go today, right now, put a down payment on. I could take the kids to school in that. It would be fine. It wouldn't be fine.
You know why the Dodge Charger and Challenger were the most popular under the table duffel bag cars, right?
Educate the world, Andy. Educate the world.
Fleet vehicles.
Uh-huh.
Every rental car company bought it by the thousands.
Yeah.
And Mopar, you can just swap out every heavily customizable fleet vehicles. That's the reason.
It is the Lego of muscle cars, for sure.
Yeah.
Real fast, shout out. Greatest college athlete car, probably still Darren McFadden, right? Do you remember his car?
Darren
McFadden at Arkansas. He had a, it was either Crown Vic or it was a Crown Vic, I believe, or the Mercury equivalent. So it was like the police, like the old police fleet vehicle. And he had it so jacked up on 22s that it basically sat as high as a truck.
I'm looking at it now. It is a Crown Vic on 24s.
24s, not 22s. Yeah.
Oh, that is amazing. Gunnar Stockton, shout out to him, current Georgia quarterback, drives an 80s F-150. It's beautiful.
Oh, most Georgia thing ever. Every time I do Georgia radio, I talk about it. I go, that is, you created the most Georgia human being in a laboratory and put a football helmet on him. Yes.
And then you'll see a Waffle House. It's been a pleasure. Ross will be back on Thursday. We got to talk about quarterback eligibility cases. And what really knows what the college football world will bring us in the next 48 hours. That is the beauty of this sport. We'll talk to you soon.